So we just started, you know, looking around and see what's out there in fitness. We both were really excited about fitness in general, running, lifting weights, that kind of stuff. And really just came across a couple older kind of products that looked like, hey, they had a lot of success, but there's so much you could do to improve upon these types of things, and specifically in something that was handheld.
Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Next Gen Podcast, a conversational series with members from Energen Wealth Partners at UBS. With an understanding of the family dynamics that can accompany multi-generational wealth, we are experienced in working with you and your family to develop a strategic plan to guide your decisions. Our approach helps provide education across generations to help define and support your long-term vision for your wealth.
Well, hello. Welcome to another episode of the Next Gen Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Vansemes. I'm an executive director and a financial advisor with Intergen Wealth Partners here at UBS. Our office and recording studio is located in Dayton, Ohio, and you can find us online at intergen@ubs.com. So today we've got an exciting episode lined up for you. We'll be joined by David Fry. He's the CEO and co-founder of Crosstoner, which has produced an innovative and compact strength training device that's really starting to take off. David's an inventor, an entrepreneur, a patent holder, and an award-winning marketer, and he's here to share his experiences with other rising inventor entrepreneurs. We'll talk about his journey, his insights, the challenges he's faced, and a vision for the future. So, David, we're very excited to have you here with us today. Thank you for joining us.
Sure, Tim. Thanks for having me.
You got it. So let's just kick things off. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey into the world of product development.
Yeah. So University of Cincinnati graduate, business college, started in the world of sales and engineering. Believe it or not, heating and air conditioning.
So, interesting.
So about 10, 15 years in HVAC, you know, eventually got to that point where I wanted to try something new. So the internet was coming into full force, right? Okay. Back in the late 90s. And so I thought that would be an exciting thing to go jump into.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. And so tell us a little bit about the product development process. And, you know, maybe you can focus in a little bit on your most recent product, the Crosstoner.
Right. Sure. So that e-commerce experience that I got when I left HVAC is really what led me to the product development, right? So we're selling direct to consumer, direct response, new inventions, that kind of stuff online. Mm-hmm. And so my business partner and I were like, you know, eventually we should try to invent something. You know, we're those kind of guys,
yeah,
right?
We're
the squirrel chasers. We're always looking for something new and cool to do.
Yeah.
To keep us, you know, kind of engaged. So we did. So we just started, you know, looking around and see what's out there in fitness. We both were really excited about fitness in general, running, lifting weights, that kind of stuff. And really just came across a couple older kind of products, you know, that looked like, hey, they had a lot of success, but there's so much you could do to improve upon these types of things, and specifically in something that was handheld.
Right.
So we literally, over some beers here and there, would start sketching things out, and to the point we got something that we're like, hey, you know, we should try to build this, right? Because you get to the point where you're always talking and you're always thinking and coming up with ideas, but you haven't executed, you haven't built anything.
Right.
So that was, you're talking about the product development staging, right? That was really the first one is the sketch. And then the second one would be, let's go make a prototype. So yeah, so we took these sketches to a friend, a Doug, my partner's, that is in CAD and industrial design. And he literally, you know, modeled up our prototype, and we were able to take that model locally in Cincinnati to get somebody to create something that we could physically hold.
And that was the Crosstoner you're talking about.
That was the earliest version of the Crosstoner. Okay. It was a big hunk of nylon or some other type of plastic with some handles. And
was that your first product?
That was the first invention.
Okay. Okay.
For sure. Yeah. This was it.
And so talk us through some of the challenges that, you know, kind of go from that cocktail napkin into the planning stage. What kind of issues did you run into?
Yeah, right. So the benefit of having a friend or a former colleague that can do some of this really complicated stuff, gave us a huge advantage. I think that's where a lot of people do stumble. Mm-hmm. Like, where do I take my sketch? Right. I don't have any money yet to put into this. And a lot of ideas probably get shelved right at that stage. So we were really fortunate to get over that first hump of getting an actual CAD file. But the real hurdles come when we tried to attach some type of resistance to this thing. And really, we're like, okay, this is not working. We had room for one. Basically, they call them surgical tubes, right? Mm-hmm. But resistance tubing.
Okay.
You know, things just weren't working right. It wasn't comfortable. It was cutting. If you try to hold it on your shoulder, it would cut it. So we kind of started running into design issues because, again, it was a pencil sketch turned into a rough prototype.
Right.
So, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. What about other products that you've worked on aside from the Crosstoner?
Oh, sure. So Minimax was one of our big hitters on television, right? Mm-hmm. So we basically, different partner this time, Tim Harrington, whose brother Kevin was one of the original sharks on Shark Tank.
Interesting.
So Tim and I put together a campaign for a product called Minimax. It's a portable charger, right? But that has the capability to jumpstart a car. Mm-hmm. And it was not a new concept. It wasn't a new product on the market. But what was innovative about what we did was, and we went to great pains to make this happen, was we made it the smallest one on the market, right? So you could fit it in your pocket. You could fit it in your purse. We had designer skins for it. We really took it something that was more industrial looking and big and bulky and shrunk it down and shot the 30-minute infomercial in Tim's backyard.
Interesting.
So, you know, that was really exciting. We bootstrapped that whole thing and we ended up going retail worldwide. We were in Walmart and Home Depot. I think we did $10, $20 million in sales with that product. We've done some sous vide product, you know, some kitchen type of stuff.
Interesting.
A personal computers system years ago that I did the e-commerce for. So yeah, there's a long list of those type of TV products.
So the current product, the Crosstoner, tell us a little bit about what makes that different and unique from other things that have been out there.
Yeah. So one of the things that we identified early on was that the limitation, the number of exercises you could actually do. So when we did these sketches, the first, you know, kind of aha moment was when we added a second set of handles to what was a traditional design of a single chest type exerciser. Mm-hmm. That really opened up the doors to numerous exercises. We're up to like 200 exercises. Wow. Right now. Wow. It is amazing. And almost half of those you can do while literally sitting in a chair.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, and try to paint the picture of what this thing looks like size-wise and things for the audience.
Sure. I mean, it's, you know, less than 2 feet, you know, tall.
Okay.
You know, foot and a half wide, and it's, you know, weighs about 2.5 pounds.
Okay.
So it can fit under your desk, right? So it's a great, great product for an at-home, you know, worker or a corporate environment.
Well, so with some of these products, undoubtedly you want to, or maybe you even have patents. So can you talk a little bit about the process? How intimidating was that? What's that all like? You know, share kind of your experiences with getting patents.
Sure. So the deal with the patents was we looked around after we had come out with the first actual consumer version. Again, couldn't find anything like this and start identifying the things about our product that would be great. Or potentially great for patentability. Mm-hmm. So you start with a provisional, right? So it's basically the provisional doesn't have to have all your original claims. It just has to have kind of a basic idea down on paper.
Okay.
But what you're doing with the provisional is you're establishing your date, right?
Okay.
So if you eventually do patent later, your patent would then come back to effectively that date that you filed your provisional. So if any time between the time you file provisional and the time you file your regular patent, somebody else comes out with something, you still have potentially protection.
Wow. Okay.
So that was something, yeah, really cool to learn. And we got that provisional in really early. So
And then what happens? So you get the provisional, and then what's kind of the next step to make it, you know, the provisional sounds like it's one step beyond the cocktail napkin. And yeah. Then what's after that?
Well, we took a stab ourselves at writing up an actual patent. And that's just more of, you know, you think you can do everything, right? And you can't. So we ended up with a law firm, Wood, Heron & Evans, down in Cincinnati.
Okay.
One of the oldest patent attorneys in the country.
Okay.
And they helped us draft our first patent, mm-hmm. which was a battle, right? So, you know, you basically you file all these claims, individual claims, with an understanding you're probably not going to get all of them. You may get none of them, but you want to get some. And you want to make them kind of as broad as you can, because if you get too specific, then it makes it easier for a competitor,
right,
to sort of bounce around it. So that was a learning experience, trying to figure out how broad you can go with different aspects of the product, the handles, the bands, the assembly, et cetera.
And just kind of a bunch of back and forth until you get it right.
Until you get it right. And then as you continue on, right, you get your first one, then you can get these continuations, right, which is, oh, you know, we discovered that we have this feature that we didn't even realize.
Interesting.
File a continuation, get another patent, and then so on and so forth.
Right. Wow. And so the cross toner is patented, I assume?
We have
parts of it.
We have a total of 5 patents on the product, and that includes the unit itself, and also the bands have their own separate patent.
Okay. Interesting. Wow. A lot of stuff we didn't know here. So you hatch this idea, you get it designed, you get it patented, you get a prototype made. At some point, you need money.
You got to sell it.
To bring this thing to the world.
Yeah.
And so can you talk a little bit about some of the things that you've experienced there and you know, the most recent version of funding is crowdfunding. And maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah. So the very first version of this actually went on QVC, did pretty well on television. So TV shopping. But it also, we learned a couple things that we didn't realize with the product itself. So we took some time to re-engineer. And that's really when we started diving into, hey, if we're really going to go down this road, let's do the patents as we talked about before. So with all that said, the legal fees mount up and you start to realize you can't keep funding this thing forever. You got to get some other funding, as you just said. And so crowdfunding is a great avenue for our situation. You know, you're talking about people willing to put up money up front for you without taking an equity stake.
Right.
And then allowing you to basically go get your, you know, tooling for the product and manufacturing, fulfillment, et cetera, you know, marketing, et cetera. So we decided on Kickstarter, you know, so we did a launch in Kickstarter here in July and that was a 30-day launch and we raised over $100,000, which was a little bit under what we really hoped for, but over for sure what our initial actual goal was.
Yeah.
Which allowed us, you know, to go on with the campaign.
Kickstarter is one that I'm familiar with. You know, for those in the audience that maybe aren't, talk a little bit about that. Essentially, it's a way for people to pre-order the product and you use funding to get your tooling and all that. Talk a little bit about
what you nailed it right there. Yeah, it's a platform where an inventor or a creator, so they'll take books, stories, movies, music, or an inventor with product, et cetera. You know, it's a way for an individual like you or me who wants to see what's the latest and greatest out on the market to put a little money up. So, you know, you basically commit to backing a project. You're not buying a product because technically, you know, for Kickstarter, the creators aren't obligated, you know, legally to actually produce and ship the product. So, you know, there's a lot of pushback in the public, you know, from that standpoint, right? But in general, it's a great platform because that money is available before you actually have to buy the tooling, which is, you know, a product like us, you know, we need that tooling money, right? So it's expensive to create tooling to manufacture. And then you need money for the actual inventory.
Sure.
And then to ship it. You know, ship it to the warehouse and then ship it out to the customer. So this is just an awesome way to get that money up front without having to give up equity.
Interesting. So Kickstarter, certainly, even for someone like me, is the brand that I recognize. You know, I'm assuming there are other crowdfunding companies or platforms.
Yeah, Indiegogo is really one of the large ones. Those are the two big ones.
And so
how
did you select Kickstarter versus their competitors?
Sure. So we actually approached a few of the crowdfunding marketers and the companies that really help you put your campaign together. They have the experience that you don't have because if you kind of screw up the setup and the marketing, the pre-marketing, you know, the email list building, if you don't get that right up front, you're not going to have success. So we picked Inventus Partners out of Carolinas, and they're basically said, let's start with Kickstarter. You know, that's kind of where they see the best success, you know, up front.
Interesting. And You mentioned that you raised 100,000 or so. Put into context, you know, of all the different submissions that go through Kickstarter, put into context, is that a successful raise up? How does it rank versus other things that are out there?
Yeah. So, I mean, Kickstarter has raised over $8 billion.
Interesting.
Our understanding is that only 2% of those would hit the 100K mark. So
you're in pretty rarefied air.
It was something I was really pushing for. About halfway through the campaign, we knew we had a shot to hit the six-figure mark, right? Yeah. And so we wanted to make a concerted push to hit that number and pulled out a couple rabbits and was able to do it.
Wow. So you get the thing designed, you get a prototype built, you've gotten the patent, you've got it to where you've got funding to begin production. Now, how do you take this thing and really give it to the world? You know, what's the next step in terms of sales and marketing and, you know, getting it into consumers' hands?
Yeah. So obviously fulfilling these orders is kind of paramount. I mean, I got my name out there all over all the marketing and so forth. So, you know, I made a commitment to these initial backers on Kickstarter that I was going to follow through with this, because again, that's a lot of the pushback is, oh, it'll never actually make it. They'll just take your money and go.
Right.
But yeah, the next steps after that are certainly we're going to bring this to retail. We're going to bring this to Amazon, potentially back to TV shopping. And really the next steps are to develop additional products, right? So this is a one size fits all. It's straight resistance. There's no electronics. There's no tracking. So we would love to, you know, develop the product line to include digital versions. And yeah, I mean, that's kind of where we're heading.
So with Amazon becoming a bigger part of people's lives, can you talk a little bit about, for those of us that don't watch a lot of TV, you know, is the home shopping channel still alive and well?
You know, it's alive and it's fairly well, but yeah, sure. Competition everywhere is from Amazon. They hit every sector. I mean, real estate, pharmacy, I mean, you name it. So certainly TV shopping, you know, has taken a significant hit over the last few years. But HSN and QVC are one company. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're still selling. So we're excited to see if there's another opportunity there. But we feel really confident with this product that we can basically sell it anywhere. You know, one of the opportunities that I'm exploring, you know, significantly is corporate health and wellness. Because
and that's for the cross toner device you're talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's just something where literally sitting under your desk and have a workout pop up on your screen or on your phone to tell you, hey, you need to take the next 2 minutes, right? 1 to 2 minutes. We've seen statistics showing that you can increase your productivity in a day by 30% if you just take a couple quick workouts in the day.
Wow.
And there's nothing quicker than 10 bicep curls and back to work you go.
Right, so, right. Yeah. So what are you thinking about there in terms of getting that out into corporate America?
Yeah. So a digital platform would be key there, right? Okay. So you'd have to be able to track everybody's usage of it and communicate with them, you know, so a communication/tracking platform. Mm-hmm. And so that's a significant undertaking. So we've got some prototypes in the laboratory, you know, that are under lock and key that not ready to divulge yet, but it's pretty exciting what we're working on.
Yeah, no, that's really good. So boy, we've talked about a lot, really great hearing about, you know, the ups and downs and the processes that you go through. Any last thoughts, not only about Crosstoner, but maybe things, tips and things that you can share with other aspiring entrepreneurs and inventors?
Yeah, I would say keep track of your finances, overestimate your costs for marketing if you get to that point.
Of all the costs that emerge, was that the biggest
dislocation
from what you thought?
It always is.
Okay.
Right. It's half of, just count it as half of everything you're going to make, you're going to have spent already on marketing.
Yeah.
Legal, I would say, tread carefully. You may not have to potentially patent something. It may not be patentable. You may think it, a lawyer may tell you it is, and it may not be. We're confident in ours, but we haven't challenged anybody with them and we haven't been challenged yet. So those are the things that, you know, I understand can be very distracting, let's say, to a business.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, David, thank you for sharing your insights. It's been an exciting journey. We'll be watching the future of Crosstoner in a very excited way with you coming in. We greatly appreciate your time and challenges. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Tim Vansemes, wishing you All the best in your financial and your professional endeavors.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the NextGen Podcast. To learn more about our team and to join our exclusive educational events throughout the year, check out our website at advisors.ubs.com/Energen. If you have any suggestions on episodes you'd like to hear, let us know by emailing us at energen@ubs.com. And if you liked this episode, be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify to hear more. This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of any offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we recommend listeners to obtain appropriate and independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services Incorporated offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct our business and that you carefully read agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products and services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services Incorporated is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.